What are some of the commonalities that hold that type of individual back from seeing the progress they want to see?
They try to change too many habits at once. You really need to start slow, and it's not sexy. Doing the mental work before you even start the physical work is a big part of it. Starting off slow is always going to win. If you can't control the calories, can really never go wrong if you base your meals around protein. Like, master the basics before you worry about getting fancy.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Dr. Joey Munoz Show, your go-to podcast for all things health, nutrition, and fitness. I'm your host, Dr. Joey, nutrition science PhD, and the founder of Fit for Life Academy. In today's episode, we dive deep into a topic that resonates with so many out there, which is shedding the infamous dad bod. Joining us is none other than Steve Lusk, famously known across social media as Dad Bod Steve. I know, his marketing is fantastic. Steve is not just any health and fitness coach. He specializes in guiding middle-aged men, particularly those juggling demanding careers, to reclaim their health and sculpt the body they've always wanted. Throughout our conversation, Steve shares an array of practical tips and proven frameworks designed to empower you to achieve your body composition goals without sacrificing your lifestyle or things that you love. Whether you're pressed for time, struggling with motivation, or simply unsure of where to start, Steve's insights will light the path to a healthier, more vibrant you. Get ready to be inspired, educated, and entertained. Let's go ahead and dive in.
Buddy.
Awesome. Dad Bod
Steve. There he is.
How are you doing, my man?
Doing great, man. Talking to Dr. Joey Munoz. Been watching his videos for so long. Now I'm actually talking to him. Is this real life? This is crazy. This is awesome.
Dude, I could say the same thing about you. I love your social media name. Where did that name come from, Dad Bod Steve? Because you definitely don't have a dad bod.
Thank you. But 5 years ago or so, a lot of my friends started becoming dads, and they started getting dad bods, and I wanted to help them lose their dad bod. So I came up with this program that was, you know, kind of designed for my friends that were turning into dads that didn't have time to live in the gym, that didn't have a ton of time to get fancy with their nutrition. And based on that, came up with the program and got my kind of alias.
That's super cool, man. I'd love to. It's one, from a marketing perspective, it's genius, right? It's like, oh, Dad Bod Steve, this guy's always talking about fitness for dads and stuff. It kind of just makes sense. That's one thing that I've struggled with a little bit, like the marketing side of things, and I think I'm getting a little bit better with it, but I picked up on that immediately when I saw your profile, which is really cool. I'd love to get to know a little bit more about you, man. Your background, how'd you get into the field, how'd you start your own business, what'd you do before? I'd love to start the conversation there.
Yeah, cool. Let's dive into it. So I started lifting weights early on in college. I got to college after, you know, having kind of a crap social life in high school. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get to college. Everything's going to change. I'm going to be able to go on dates. Girls are going to love me. It's going to be just like the movies where the guys go to college and everything just changes. And after a kind of sad freshman year, nothing changed. So I knew I had to make some major changes to my habits. And I noticed that a lot of the guys that were working out, taking care of their bodies on a regular basis, as opposed to me, who was just playing a lot of PlayStation 2 and watching a lot of DVDs and drinking a lot, that wasn't working up. So I said, all right, I'm willing to try anything. Started doing push-ups, eventually got enough courage to go to the weight room, which was terrifying for me at the time, Joey. I was like, I made fun of guys that worked out. I was like, why would you lift heavy stuff for no reason? Or why would you run around in a circle on a track? This was going totally against brand for me. I decided to try it. And I was like, oh, this feels pretty good. I'm doing these push-ups. And what I found is that if I just do one more push-up every single time, I'm able to like get that number up. After a couple months, I actually started seeing lines in my arms. For the first time, little triceps started coming in, started getting little pecs. But more importantly than that, I noticed a huge shift in my mentality. I just started feeling better about myself, started getting confident, started getting the courage to actually talk to girls instead of just standing against the wall and waiting for them to talk to me, which, Joey, horrible tactic. It never works. It does not work. You cannot just stand against the wall and look cool and smoke a cigarette and wait for a girl to come up to you. zero batting average on that. So anyways, started getting all this amazing mental confidence. I was hooked, started reading, you know, the muscle magazine, started learning a little bit about nutrition, not as much as you know, but I just started eating more protein, doing the simple things. And, you know, within 6 months, I was totally transformed. Yeah, physically, but mentally. And I guess my brain kind of made the connection with, yeah, take care of your body and the rest of your life improves. And for the last 21, 22 years, it's been all along those same lines. So that's how I started. And then once I moved to California after living in Boston for a little while, I was trying to do the whole actor thing. And while I was doing that, I was bartending because, you know, most acting gigs, they don't pay money. If you're even lucky enough to get cast in something to make some extra money, I started a little personal training business. I didn't think I was going to like it. I was like, I love going to the gym. I don't want to take something that I love to do and turn it into a job that I don't like. Yeah. So I kind of started that reluctantly. Like, you don't want to go to the gym and be like, oh, I hate this place. I used to love it, but now it's a place of work and I hate it. The opposite ended up happening. I started training kind of friends and their friends and getting them results. And I was like, oh, this is kind of awesome. And then I learned about marketing and the brand building and how to make Facebook posts and learn how to sign people up, sell them, and get them just as in love with fitness as much as I loved it. And then eventually I went online and decided I liked that even more than training people in person. Then the algorithm gods blessed me and I was able to take my business fully online a few years ago. And now here we are, man. That's the condensed version.
That's super sweet, man. You know, you mentioned something that I feel like a lot of people can resonate with, which is when people don't have the habit of going to the gym regularly and lifting weights, a lot of people have the idea or the thought of like, why the hell would I do that? Right? Because it seems like it's something that's only for vanity reasons. Like, yes, you're building big muscles. Some people don't care about that. It's so hard to explain to somebody who doesn't work out how positively it impacts everything, right? It's not just looking better, although it's an awesome plus. But I've talked about this on the podcast a number of times. I think that a lot of the success that I've had in other areas of my life are a direct impact of lessons that I learned from being consistent with working out and living a healthy lifestyle. And I know that sounds super cliche, but it's true, right? Like when you quote unquote force yourself to go to the gym when you don't want to, you are learning how to do things that you don't want to do because you know you should do them. When you train for a couple of months and you don't see much progress, but you're willing to trust the process, you're learning the value of delayed gratification. Those things helped me with going to graduate school, like, and working hard, even though I didn't see the end results right away, right? And being okay with putting in the work, knowing that the result's going to come in later. I don't know, man. Like, I know that's somewhat of a philosophical thing, but have you noticed the same thing? Is that something you talk about with your clients at all?
100%. You know, I've read all of the popular personal development and motivation books, and all of them really come down to, you know, every single one has kind of their own shtick and old spin on it. But really what it comes down to is the people who get good at doing things that they don't want to do when you don't feel like doing it. Meaning like you're sitting on the couch, it's 9 o'clock at night. You've already decided you're not working out because you deserve it for whatever reason. You're tired. Maybe you didn't have the best dinner, so you're not feeling great. But the guys that are able to sit there and be like, listen, man, I had a workout scheduled for today. I said I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it anyways. That type of skill set where you can do things you don't want to do when you've literally already decided that it's not going to happen. You turn around, you do it anyways. You develop not just the muscles in your body, but you develop that discipline muscle. And the discipline muscle is really the difference between staying exactly where you are, which is usually comfortable, and then pushing through and getting to that zone that you claim that you want, that you're not there yet. And the people who can master that skill set, whether it's in the gym or anything work related, doing that extra, writing that extra page that you said you weren't going to write, or or studying for 10 extra minutes. Those are the people that succeed. And if you can master that skill, you can really do anything in life. It's like a muscle. The more you do it too, the better you get at it.
Yes. The more you do it, the better you get at it, for sure. And it's a skill that continues to improve, right? We're not going to sit here and act like, at least I won't act like I always get it right, because there are definitely times where I know I should do things and I don't do them. But over time, I have noticed my ability to do things that I don't want to do, that ability gets better just by practicing, right? And I don't know, I think the one thing that helps me, and I'd love to get your perspective on this, is just not tying so much emotion around the thing you need to do. And I know that's easier said than done as well. I think just innately, personality-wise, I tend to be somebody who's not like very emotionally tied to things. So like, if I need to go to the gym, it's not because I'm happy or I'm not going to go because I'm not feeling good. It's kind of just like, hey, you just do this. With work, it's the same thing. You kind of just do this and try to have a very like, I'm not going to say emotionless, but not letting the way you feel or your emotions influence the things you do. Again, easier said than done. I don't necessarily know how somebody can get there besides repetition, but I have found it's a trait that helps me be able to do that.
Yeah. And there's a lot that goes into that. And yeah, we're not robots. We can't just make a checklist of the optimal day and go through it every single day and check it off like Schwarzenegger and the Terminator movies. But let's say you have a to-do list of 10 things, you get through 5 of them and you're like, that's it for the day. If you can go through and really grind out those extra 2 and hit 7 out of 10, the next thing you know, 7 out of 10 becomes the new normal. And then you get to the point where you can do 8 out of 10. And then next thing you know, that to-do list, you do 10 out of 10. You're like, all right, I've leveled up. Now what's next? Let's put 12 things on the to-do list. Then you get 8 of them done, then 9 of them done.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a direct analogy, but yeah, there's emotion involved. You don't have to be a total drone. You don't have to go David Goggins every single day and run 100 miles. Nobody's at Goggins level except for Goggins. But if you could do just a little bit more every single day and do just get really, really good at doing that, just that one extra thing that you weren't normally going to do, that becomes your new normal. And it's an ongoing process. You just get better at it. It does not happen overnight.
It's the concept of progressive overload, right? Same thing with training, same thing with behavior change. Like somebody who's never focused, let's say, on like protein consumption, let's say they eat 100 grams and they should be theoretically eating twice that, 200 grams. Like,
yeah.
You might be able to go from 100 to 200 overnight, but you'll have more success if you go from 100 to 110, then 120, then 130, right? Same concept here. It's definitely a skill that you can learn. Dude, so you work mainly with dads, correct? Or older? I'm not going to use the word older. I'm young, man. I'm only 29. So when I say older, I'm talking about middle-aged men who are perhaps parents, have a busy schedule with work, they have a lucrative career, they have a family, and perhaps it feels like they don't have any time to focus on their fitness. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, most of the guys that I work with, there are a couple outliers, but most of them are between 35 and 50. Their schedules are a bit different. They're either dads or very, very busy with the type of schedule a dad would have. And when I was 29, my responsibility was a little bit less. That's when I was bartending. I had time to go to the gym easily 5-6 days a week and go there for 90 minutes every single time. I could meal prep. I could do everything that I needed to do. I could basically live like a bodybuilder without being a bodybuilder. And as you get older, you get more responsibilities and it becomes more about planning and finding what works for you. And the misconception is that if you're 47 years old, that you need to be able to train 5 days a week and hit your perfect macros every single day. But the reality is, no, man, you don't have to go that hard. You just have to be consistent with a few things and you'll be surprised at the type of results that you can get as long as you master the basics.
So for those types of individuals, right? Like, what are some of the commonalities that hold that type of individual back from seeing the progress or the results that they want to see?
The biggest thing is probably The cycle goes like this, Joey. They'll kind of slack for a few months. They'll look at themselves in the mirror and say, all right, enough is enough. I'm going to go beast mode. I'm going to dust off that program that I did in high school, I did in college. I'm going to go 5 days a week. I'm going to follow Joey Munoz and do every single thing that he says when it comes to nutrition. I'm going to track everything. I'm going to meal prep. I'm going to get everything down to the calorie, down to the gram of protein. And not just dads, but a lot of people do this come January 1st. They say, this is going to be my resolution. And this, the long and short of it is they try to change too many habits at once. They want to achieve 12 to 18 months worth of habit change in a week or instantaneously, and the brain just doesn't like doing that. So in order to fix that, you really need to start slow, and it's not sexy. Everybody wants fast results. So instead of being like, all right, I'm going to do the perfect program, you say, no, I'm going to get to the gym 3 days a week at this exact time, and I'm just going to focus on showing up with the very, very basic program. On the diet side of things, I am just going to focus on getting protein on my plate. I'm not going to worry about getting the perfect amount of grams, but normally I'd have a very, very carb and fat or ultra processed food. I'm just going to make an effort to get to the grocery store, make sure I got a ton of protein in the fridge, get it on my plate every single time. So you start off with something like that. Get to the gym 3 days a week, get protein on your plate, and do that for 6 weeks, 6 months. And once you master that, then you can kind of move on to the next thing. So you got to start slow in the interest of long-term sustainability. And a lot of people miss that point.
Yeah, man, it's really hard for people. It's really hard for people to be okay with starting slow. And this is something I've experienced with a number of my clients as well. And certainly anecdotally more with middle-aged men than perhaps women, at least in my experience with the clients that I've worked with. And I think it comes down to the type of person too, right? Because specifically with the men that you're working with, like if they're really busy, they're likely driven, they're likely putting all their effort into their career, they're putting a lot of effort into their family. And if they're going to take on this whole fitness thing, they want to put a lot of effort into it too, right? And then a lot of individuals played sports when they were younger, and they remember what they used to be able to do. And like you said, they try to do the exact same thing they used to do, and they can get injured. It can be overwhelming. It's too much, too quickly. It's funny. I'm thinking here of a story. Like I just started working with a new client about a month ago. And one of the things that we talked about in our onboarding call was alcohol intake. And he didn't have an issue with alcohol, but he had the behavior of drinking like 5 or 6 beers every night. And I'm like, man, that adds up, right? Like from a caloric standpoint, like that adds up. It's probably a good idea to slowly reduce the intake of alcohol. And we do our first check in 2 weeks later, and he was really excited because he was down 10 pounds in 2 weeks. And I was like, man, you know, I'm not going to not be positive and supportive. It's great that your weight came down so much. And he was like, I stopped drinking alcohol, cold turkey, and I've been only eating this. I'm like, listen, this is great. I'm happy for the success you're having. But because the thing he said at the end was, I hope I can lose another 10 pounds in the next 2 weeks. I'm like, listen, that's not going to happen. That is not going to happen. You lost a ton of water weight because you haven't been drinking alcohol. These next 2 weeks, your weight might actually stay stable because you just dropped so much weight, right? And it's also like, helping people have realistic expectations, right? Because without a coach, that individual might say, man, I lost 10 pounds and it worked. And then 2 more weeks go by and you lose another pound. And it's like people have such a hard time understanding that that's still really good progress and you're not going to make progress every single week, right? How do you navigate those situations when people have unrealistic expectations?
That's a big part of my job. You can get great workouts for free. You can get perfect macros for free or with, you know, carbon diet app. It's not about that. Having realistic expectations. And then on the subject of the scale, understanding that the scale is one of just many, many, many metrics to use. And you should not live and die by the scale or else it's going to be a really tough mental battle. So as far as setting realistic expectations, you know, I've had the person come in and they lose 5 pounds, 8 pounds right off the bat because maybe they start fasting for the first time, they flush a bunch of water weight, then the next 2 weeks they don't lose any weight and they think they're failing and you want to give up. So you have to have that tough conversation. You have to explain to them what's actually going on, the difference between weight loss and fat loss. And the best skill that I've found is that you have to be really, really comfortable and calm having the exact same conversation with 30 different guys in a month, because everybody faces the exact same issues. But a lot of the issues come up over time and they affect everybody differently. But yeah, having the skill of setting realistic expectations, letting them know that 5 pounds is great in a week. It's not normal. But if we average over the next 3 months, 6 months, 1 to 2 pounds a week, that's going to be amazing progress. And on top of that, look at this. The numbers that I paid attention to the most, and I wish everybody could get the benefits that I had. Look at the numbers in the weight room. If those are consistently going up just by one rep here or there, 2 pounds, 5 pounds here or there, it is only a matter of time before you see dramatic results in the mirror and you're actually changing the shape of your body and you're not just relying on the scale to tell you whether or not you're doing well. It's like a video game. You get a new high score in the gym every single day. You level up, you get those experience points. You don't see those changes from day to day, but 3 months down the line, 6 months down the line, 18 months down the line, you're going to be like, holy crap, I've transformed just because I'm adding those numbers in the weight room. So I know I went a little off topic there, but that's kind of the conversation that I see happen on a regular basis. And managing expectations is tough, but it's a big part of the job.
Yeah. No, I love that point of bringing up the topic that there are more metrics than just the scale weight, right? And I will say I experience this working with female clients more than male clients where they do get very hung up on just the number on the scale. And let's be honest, like the number on the scale is important, right? Like we can say if somebody has excessive body fat and they're trying to get a little bit leaner, like the scale does have to go down at some point, right? But it's not the only metric to look at in terms of progress on a short-term basis. And I experience this all the time where I'll have clients check in with me and they'll say things like, I'm feeling so much better. I'm feeling so much stronger. I'm actually starting to see some muscle definition in the mirror, but I'm not happy because my scale weight hasn't gone down. And I'm like, listen, I totally understand. You want the scale weight to go down and that is what we're working towards, but it's so important to reframe the way you see progress and not just focus on the scale, because all of these other metrics are important, right? We know that body recomposition is a thing, especially for people who are newer to lifting. So if you spend six months lifting, and like you said, you're getting stronger on a weekly basis, even if your weight doesn't change all that much, the way you look will change. And I'm not going to say dramatically for everybody, because everybody, you know, genetics impacts how quickly your body changes as well, but you will certainly see changes. And again, that's another really big thing that I talk to my clients about. Like, don't just fixate on the scale. How do you navigate that?
Tough. You gotta basically give them a checklist of all the other things we can measure. Progress pics. Take a picture. Not every single day. You're not going to see the changes. But if you take a picture once a month, the month one to month two pic, you may see some changes. But you're always going to see changes in the month one versus the month five. Yeah. And even though it may be a 5-10 pound difference on the scale, you thought you wanted to lose 25 pounds, you may look and say, oh man, my shoulders are wider, my waist is narrower, the body fat percentage, if you can get that measured, that's a huge one. But look at how your clothes are fitting. I love the relative that you haven't seen in a while reaction. Yeah. That one is always good. You see, there's certain relatives you only see every 3 months, every 6 months. Joey, what have you been doing? You look great. And you're thinking to yourself, well, I only lost 7 pounds, but I must be doing something right. Your energy levels. And then another one that I think is underrated, look at the habits that you're consistently doing that you weren't doing 6 months ago. 6 months ago, you weren't working out 3 or 4 times a week. 6 months ago, you weren't eating protein consistently. You didn't even know what an omega-3 was. you've improved your sleep. You're getting an hour more sleep. And yeah, over time, this is most likely going to lead to a good long-term outcome versus, you know, maybe you don't look like a before and after P90X picture like you see on the infomercials, but you're setting yourself up for long-term success. So the more things that you can kind of track and see that are improving, the less you're relying on the scale. And it's not always easy to do, but it can be super valuable.
Hey guys, some of you may not know that I'm the scientific advisor for a supplement company called Outwork Nutrition. I help with the formulation of new products to help ensure that they're effective and backed by science. Unlike many other supplement companies out there, we don't rely on exaggerated claims or flashy marketing tactics. Instead, we let the science speak for itself. We take pride in formulating products that deliver real results, helping you achieve your fitness goals in a meaningful way. If you're in the market for supplements like protein powder, pre-workout, or recovery products, make sure to check us out at outworknutrition.com. And as a thank you for being an avid listener of this podcast, use code Joey for an exclusive discount at checkout. You can find the link to our website down in the description of this podcast episode. Remember, our goal is to empower you with science-backed supplements that truly make a difference. Choose Outwork Nutrition and elevate your fitness to new heights. Yeah, you know, one thing that I tend to share with clients that I think helps a ton, because we can be so hyperfixated on just the outcomes too, right? Like, yeah, let's say the person maybe hasn't lost some weight and, or they've lost less than they wanted to. And let's say their strength isn't increasing super fast and they're not motivated. You know, having the conversation of like, hey, there are multiple reasons why you do this stuff. Like, yes, you have some aesthetic-based goals. You want to improve the way you look. But understand that even if your body didn't change, just doing these things is improving your quality of life, right? Most people who are parents want to live a long, healthy life, to be there for their kids, to be there for their grandkids. Most people, even if their weight doesn't change a ton in a short time period, if they start focusing on eating more whole foods, sleeping better, exercising, they're going to feel better overall, right? And one thing I've realized that definitely helps people at least get through a rut when they're struggling mentally with their lack of satisfaction with rate of progress is just like, hey, remember that just doing these things is a win. Before we worked together, you, like you said, you didn't work out regularly, or you would for a month and then you would stop. This is the longest you've been working out for consistently. You're eating way more protein than you were before, more fiber, your calories, et cetera. And I was actually just watching your content before this, little tangent here. I love that you made a video on fiber.
Fiber is the new protein, man. And I think you had one as well. I did not plan that. I thought it was funny. We both had fiber. I try to stay on top of the trends, and I'm predicting that 2024 is going to be a big year for fiber. And I've made an effort to increase it. And
play some bets. Going well.
Yeah. What's going to be bigger this year? Fiber, protein. I don't know. What else is in the running?
You know, since we're talking about fiber, and maybe we could transition here to talk a little bit about nutrition, I definitely want to get your perspective on what you see are perhaps some of the bigger mistakes that individuals make that hold them back, right? Or maybe not even hold them back, but they're just like focusing on the wrong things. And then two, when you do start working with someone, what are some of the main like behaviors or recommendations that you like to develop with a client that maybe give like the biggest return on investment?
Yeah, sure. So the biggest mistakes, trying to change too much at once, going from a typical American diet, maybe they're getting a Chipotle bowl every single day for dinner. They're doing Postmates every single night. After that, they're late night snacking. They start off the morning with a coffee, in a coffee with a lot of calories, you know, with like whipped cream, stuff like that. And
so you're talking about a sweet drink with a little bit of coffee, not a coffee.
Yeah, exactly. It's got rainbow swirls and it's got a fun name and it's 750 calories. Trying to go from that to trying to eat like Michael Phelps in one day is probably the biggest mistake, or just trying to cut calories too much. They're going from eating 2,800 calories a day to going to 1,600 calories a day and wondering why that's not working out long term. Trying to jump on fads, trying to do things that they don't necessarily like because that they read that it has good results. Like, oh, I'm going to try carnivore, even though I'm not a huge steak fan. I'm going to do this because it's trendy. So trends that aren't necessarily in line. And then just, yeah, trying to do too much at once is probably the biggest one. Trying to eat in a way that's not convenient for them, that they're just doomed from the start. What about yourself? What are you seeing?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to touch on that one there quickly when you were saying like following a particular diet, right? And then the key thing that you said is it doesn't work long term, right? Because most things work short term. I was just having this exact conversation with a client earlier today where he's really been struggling to like adhere to our overall nutritional plan. And like my perspective, and I'm sure you do something similar, is I don't tell my clients not to eat certain things. I give them some tips to help them minimize eating certain things. But my main approach is like, let's focus on developing habits around what you need to be eating every day, right? Like a fruit and vegetable goal, having a regular meal schedule, meal prepping once a week, these types of things. Anyways, this client has been struggling over the past month or so. And he asked me today, you know, do you think it's probably a good idea for me to completely limit all snacks and things like chocolate and chips and stuff? Or do you think I should go on like a very strict type of like paleo diet or whatever it may be? And his rationale was like, he's like, I've done it before and I've had success with it. And I told him, I was like, if you've had success with it, why are you not doing it still? Right. And it's because you only have success with it in a short period of time. And the conversation we had, and this is what I see with people often, is like they want to use these types of methods as a way to mask what they're really struggling with. Mm. In his case, I think it's lack of prioritization, right? Because, and this is a commonality amongst people who say that they are busy, is that I didn't have time to make food, or I didn't have time to exercise. It's like, no. The first step is like acknowledging that this stuff takes time and effort, and it has to be a priority. And a priority means that it's more important. Like other stuff gets put on hold for this stuff. This stuff doesn't get put on hold for other stuff. And if you do put this stuff on hold for other stuff, you're never going to have success with it, right? Yeah. And one thing I shared with him, it's like, listen, I have a son. My wife is a stay-at-home mom. Like we live off of my business. So like this is a full-time job for me running my business. No matter what, I get my workout in from 9:30 to 11 a.m. every morning. Like if the work didn't get done, it didn't get done. Like this is a priority. This is my number one thing every day. And you really do have to get to that point, right? And so I told him, I was like, listen, don't waste time trying to not eat these things. Instead, you need to set an hour aside on Sundays. Figure out what you're going to eat for the week. Doesn't mean you have to prep every meal, but figure out what's convenient. You need to put the time and effort beforehand to figure this shit out, right?
Yeah.
So if you really don't have time, then you have to order a meal prep. If you can't afford meal prep, then you have to make your food. Like you have to figure out what works for you, but you still have to put in the time and effort. That's what people are, in my opinion, trying to circumvent or get around. And there's no getting around that at all. I see that as one of the biggest, not mistakes, but one of the biggest hurdles. Like people do not want to face the reality that it takes time and it takes effort. So they want a simple solution, which is following a particular diet, because they're going to have some success with it short term, but it does not work long term.
Yeah. It all comes down to prioritization and planning and doing the mental work before you even start doing the physical work is a big part of it. I make my clients do a vision exercise when they first come on, and we talk about some short-term goals. Awesome. Yeah, you want to lose 20, 30 pounds, but really, where do you want to be a decade from now? Where do you want to be 30 years from now? What's going to happen if you continue on your trajectory? Why do you want to be that way in 30 years? Oh, well, my grandfather, he died early of a heart attack. He wasn't able to see me grow up. I don't want that same fate. I make them revisit that on a regular basis. And I tell them right away, I say, it's not like, the secret where if you put a Ferrari on a vision board, it's automatically going to end up in your driveway. But when you remind yourselves of your long-term goals on a regular basis, and why you want that, then you will make it more of a priority. And even if it's a priority, it doesn't make it doesn't mean jack if you don't plan. So prioritization by doing the right type of mental work and then planning accordingly. Every single week, you have to look at your schedule. Tell them for every single meal, and this is a foreign concept for a lot of people, you have to roughly know what you're going to eat every single meal of the week. That doesn't mean you have to have it down to the snack, but you have to have a pretty rough idea. All right, I'm going out to dinner on Saturday night. I know I'm going to work around that. But every other night, we're eating dinner at home. Let's make sure we go to the grocery store. We have enough groceries so that we're not doing Postmates on Thursday and Friday night and getting, you know, pizza one night, subs on the other night, just a ton of calories. Then we're going out to dinner on Saturday and you trashed Thursday through Saturday. So you may as well trash Sunday and then we'll get started on Monday again. But if you do the mental work, you do that helps you with your priorities. Then you got to do a little bit of preparation, a little prep, 5-10 minutes on a Sunday, even if it's just mapping it out, not even necessarily meal prep. It goes so far, Joey, and not enough people do that. It's a little bit of work at the beginning to make sure that the rest of the work for the rest of the week and the rest of the month and just going forward, it comes to fruition. And it's a huge thing that not enough people should do that they should be doing.
You know, it's a good point of like always knowing what you're going to eat, as simple as that sounds. Because I'm sure something you hear as well from clients, it's like when you ask them, hey, like, what are you struggling with when it comes to nutrition? And it goes something along the lines of, I'm really busy, so when lunchtime comes around, I don't know what I'm going to eat, so I just grab whatever's available. Yeah. And I will be honest, to me, that's somewhat of a foreign concept because I've been somewhat passionate about health and fitness since I was really young because both of my parents were into health and fitness. So from like the age of 15, 16, I really cared about my food and exercise and all this stuff. But it's like, that's a fairly easy fix, right? If your issue is that lunchtime comes around and you don't know what you're going to eat, so you end up ordering whatever, or you end up eating whatever's available, well, then you just need to carve out some time on a day where you're not super busy and figure it out, yeah. Right? I'd love to hear from you, and I'll share what I do too. Like tips, not tips, or behaviors that you have that make it easy for you to stay on top of your nutrition, right? Because this stuff should not take a ton of time or mental energy either. Like you mentioned, it takes some more effort at the beginning because you're learning. Yep. But the goal is to develop a system that feels easy, right? So for me, like I work from home. I know I have some luxuries that other individuals don't have, but in my fridge at all times, there's at least 3 to 5 pounds of cooked protein sources, whether it's ground beef or chicken. And thankfully, my wife helps me with that. If I see that we're low on ground beef or something, I'll be like, hey, babe, I need you to go to the grocery store and make some ground beef. She'll do that for me. There's always some cooked veggies and we always have some fruit and we always have some, like, I don't know, potato or rice package or something. I can at any moment, at any given time, go downstairs and put together a healthy meal in under 2 minutes, right? And that's what works for me. Like, we just have stuff made in the fridge. I kind of just mix and match whatever I want. What are some things that you do?
Well, I don't know. I want to say it's unique, but I don't mind eating kind of the same stuff over and over again. So, but at the same time, it's not exactly the same. I think a good tip is find a handful, 5-6 meals that you like, that are easy to make, that are in line with your goals, and then just repeat the crap out of them. Make that 80-90% of your diet, and then give yourself some wiggle room on the weekends or plan times throughout the week where you can kind of get whatever you want. That works for me, and I don't think it's unreasonable. I'm not saying you have to have the same exact thing every single day, but for the most part, we do repeat a lot of the same meals. Everybody does. But if you can find a handful of them that are in line with your goals, that every single week you go to the grocery store and make sure to have those ingredients, do a little bit of prep where all you have to do is just take it out of the fridge or peel off the top or throw it in the microwave and it's ready, and you know you're not going to eat something that's not in line with your goals because you're temporarily stressed out, I think that'll help out a lot. And I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't think that's triathlete, professional athlete level preparation. I think most people, if they really wanted to do that, they could make that happen.
What do you say to the person that's like, oh, I can't eat the same thing every day?
I say, how's that working out for you? Like, what you can, you have two options. You can either that, okay, that's fine. You can definitely have flexibility. And if you want to eat something different every single day, you got to get really good at tracking your food. And like, I mean, really good at it, because it's tough. You're a dietitian. Is that your title? Is that your official title?
No. I just have my PhD in nutritional sciences. There's like some, okay. There's some, it's just nuance with what degree
you get. You are literally a PhD. And I promise you that if you were to get a food scale and get takeout food for three meals a day and try to track everything, how accurate do you think you would be within, I don't know, would you even be within 100 calories? Would you be within 200 calories?
No, it would be so hard to do. It would be so hard to do. I would usually would I recommend clients, because the accuracy is so low. Usually I give my clients some general guidelines on how to guesstimate caloric content when eating out. And then I just tell them, listen, across the board, add 20% to that. It's like as a baseline measure, because you're most likely at least 20% below what it actually is.
Then you have to really, really explain that. You're like, oh, Steve's telling me that I'm 200 pounds. I should be eating 1600 calories every day. And it gets that conversation. It's like, no, you log it in as 1600 calories, but I promise it's probably like 2200. Well, Steve says I should be eating starving amounts. And I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying it's really, really tough to be accurate. But
yeah.
Back to the person who wants to eat something different every single day. I say, listen, man, it's got to be one or the other. You can have it be a free-for-all and not track anything and roll the dice. It's probably not going to go your way. Or we can change it. Let's start with one meal a day where you're every single morning, instead of having a different fast food sandwich or a different takeout sandwich from a different restaurant that's close to your work, every single morning, do some overnight oats, all right? Make it tasty, make it high in protein, add some ingredients. Let's just start there. And if you can do that for 3 weeks, we'll take it to the next step. But having that first meal of the day, I think that's a great, great step. And eventually you want to kind of get them repeating some things that they like, that they know are in line with their goals. Because it really can't be a free-for-all, right? You got to have some rules in play that you follow on a really regular basis that you're consistent with.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, some structure is necessary. You just need to find the type of structure that doesn't feel super restrictive to you, right? And that can be difficult. 100%. And it could feel restrictive at the beginning. You just gotta, you gotta work through it as well. I mean, we can't mask the fact that learning something and improving at something is uncomfortable at the beginning. Cause I feel like sometimes people push too much on the other side of like, it shouldn't feel difficult at all. Like, it shouldn't feel restrictive at all. And I agree that it shouldn't feel like overly difficult or overly restrictive. But when you start anything new, it's difficult, right? I'm a big fan, similar to yourself, of simplicity when it comes to nutrition. I eat the same stuff every single day. My wife is like, how do you do that? And I'm just like, easy. Like, I eat because it's time to eat. And like most of my meals, I don't really even think about it, even though, because sometimes people think like, oh, that person must not love food. Like, I love food. You know, I love food. One of my favorite things is to go to nice restaurants and try things I've never tried. Like, I love food. But for my day-to-day, it's just, again, you just gotta, you know, it's like saying with work, you can't do the same job every day or whatever. You know, it's the same concept. Like, you have to feel comfortable with the monotony of doing the same things every day. And honestly, you get to the point where you start to enjoy it as well, right? I think people tend to overcomplicate the nutrition piece, try to follow really fancy recipes and all this stuff. It's like, man, just grab your plate, add a protein source that you like, add a simple carbohydrates, add some veggies, make that the majority of your meals. That's how I eat the majority of my meals. It's like ground beef, some rice, some broccoli, or some chicken, a sweet potato, something super simple.
And you can mix it up with different seasonings, and they have all these great low-cal sauces now. It's not that difficult as long as you get to the store and you're prepared for it. Joey, what city are you in?
Tampa, Florida.
All right. So Tampa has some pretty awesome food, I could imagine. Yeah. So I'm in Los Angeles. Some of the best restaurants in the world are here. Yeah. And I go to them, man. I go to all those spots that I see pop up on my Instagram, oh man, we have some great burger places. We have awesome hot chicken places coming up. You name it. We got Michelin star restaurants, every celebrity chef, and you got to tell yourself, listen, that stuff will taste a lot better when you don't eat it every single day. If you say, I'm going to go out, I'm going to get two meals out this week, the rest I'm going to make for myself to the best of my abilities. It makes it, you appreciate that delicious Tampa food or Los Angeles food so much more. It's great. And I don't think it's unreasonable at all.
Yeah, totally. You know, that's a really good perspective. It's like, because I go out to eat with my wife maybe like twice a week. One meal will be like at a restaurant, and then like another meal will just be like, you know, grabbing food out or whatever. Not at a restaurant, like something quick.
Yep.
And you're completely right. And this is something I like to share with clients too. It's like, you can, you know, if you eat most of your meals at home, they're pretty simple and you're following these rules that we're sharing, you can go out to eat once a week, enjoy yourself, and not feel guilty about it at all.
Yeah.
Like you can just enjoy the meal, not worry about calories, not worry about much really at all. Like if it's truly, you're just doing that once a week or so, right? The issue is, like you mentioned, and we were talking about earlier, it's like, oh, we ordered Postmates because we didn't have dinner ready. And that's a meal out, quote unquote. And you do it a couple times. And then when you go out to the restaurant, you feel guilty about going to the restaurant because you already haven't been doing what you're supposed to do throughout the week. And now this exacerbates your negative feelings. And then you wake up Monday and you have to check in with your coach and you're a couple pounds heavier. Yeah. And now you feel bad. And it escalates, right? So I think that's a great recommendation, man, of like, hey, if you eat the majority of your meals at home, you can go out to eat once a week. Just enjoy it. It's not that big of a deal. If you do happen to eat out more frequently because of work or whatnot, one tip that I like to give clients, like, just try your best to focus on single ingredient items. It makes it super simple. Again, not because single ingredient items by any means have this magical effect for fat loss. It's easier to stay on track, right? If you go to an Asian spot and get like a fried rice and chicken teriyaki and it's all mixed up, like, good luck guesstimating that. But if you go somewhere and get a salad with maybe the dressing on the side so you can control how much there is and some grilled chicken on top, that's a lot easier to guesstimate. And even if you don't guesstimate correctly, you can be quite sure that the caloric content of that's going to be lower, right? Again, I think a lot of this stuff is really easy to say and it's hard for people to actually develop the behaviors. I don't know. What's your thought on this? What do you think are some of the things that prevent people from actually developing these behaviors?
Well, here's a client that I run into a lot. I have a lot of guys that travel all the time. They say, eat out twice a week. That's not an option. I'm eating three meals at the airport this week. What do I do there? Yeah, trying to give them that type of advice where you say, well, pretty much most chain restaurants will have some type of option where you get a salad and protein or veggies and protein. Do that. You don't have to do it every single time you go to the restaurant. But if you find yourself eating at restaurants more often than you're eating at home, you have to find a couple kind of staples that you like. And then as far as making it a long-term thing, just starting off slow is always going to win. If you can't control the calories, you can really never go wrong if you base your meals around protein. Like when I first started getting into nutrition, macros weren't a thing. I knew what a calorie was. I knew the difference between carbs and fats, but there were no smartphones. There weren't apps, but I had amazing success. And I know this isn't going to be the same for everybody, but when I just started focusing on making my meals around protein, making my snacks around protein, that went so far for me in just changing my body and just finding a little thing, a little rule that you can kind of apply to every single meal that's in line with your goals will go further than most people realize if you're consistent with it, especially over time.
Are you tired of spending countless hours grocery shopping, cooking, and preparing your meals? I get it. Time is precious, and that's where Icon Meals comes into play. I've partnered with Icon Meals to bring you delicious, macro-friendly, and high-protein meals that will make it easier than ever for you to achieve your fitness goals. I understand that you may have hesitations over the cost of a meal prep service compared to cooking food at home. But let's face it, how often do you spend more money eating out because you didn't have time to prepare your food at home anyways? With Icon Meals, you not only save time, but you invest in your health. These meals are carefully crafted to be healthier and more in line with your fitness goals than most of the food that you eat out anyways. So why wait? Visit iconmeals.com and explore their wide array of mouth-watering meals. And as a special bonus for listening to this podcast, use code Joseph10 at checkout for a special discount off of your order. By the way, you can find all of the necessary links in the description of this podcast. Don't let time be a barrier to your success. Choose Icon Meals and fuel your journey towards a healthier, fitter you.
Yeah, I love the idea of, especially for people who eat out a ton because they have to, like focusing more on protein, right? Like, so this is one thing I do anytime I go out to eat. For example, if we go to a place that has burgers, I love burgers. Most people get burgers and it comes with a side of fries, right? And the fries may be 400 or 500 calories easily, right? Especially if you get a good amount of them. I love fries. I rarely get the fries and I'll just get an extra patty because let's be honest, volume of food matters, right? So if you only have the burger and you don't have the fries, you might be hungry. Replace the fries with some more protein. It might not be 400 or 500 calories. It might be 200 or 300 calories for an extra patty. So you reduce the caloric content. And theoretically, that large amount of protein should help you feel satisfied. And if you feel satisfied, you'll probably snack less between now and the next meal. I think people also try to hyperfixate on like making this meal as low calorie as possible. And sometimes that backfires.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, if you're hungry, I actually recommend having a big meal that fills you up. But it should fill you up with the right stuff. If you're getting the protein and the veggies and you're eating sufficiently, even if the caloric content is really similar, if you're having more fiber and more protein in this meal, again, even if the caloric content is the same, you're probably going to feel fuller for longer and you're probably going to reduce your caloric intake throughout the rest of the day. That's something that people don't tend to think about at all.
Yeah, well, you can have 1,200 calories of candy or soda or fries and be hungry an hour later, but try eating 1,200 calories of chicken breasts and baked potatoes. It's a struggle. It's an uphill battle. Yeah. Add some veggies to there. So yeah, food volume is a big one that we talk about a lot with my clients and just trying to find the foods that fill you up for the least amount of calories. You can get 2,000 calories in a day and be stuffed and satisfied, and you can also have 2,000 calories a day and, you know, technically lose weight but be miserable because you're starving all the time. Your body's not getting the fiber, the micronutrients that it needs. So that there are two ways to go about it.
So
volume is huge.
Quick question here from the nutrition side of things. When you work with clients, this is just me being interested in learning more about how you do what you do. Do you have a particular framework in terms of like order of things that you like to, for clients to develop first and then later on when it comes to nutrition?
Yeah, I know it's controversial, but the first thing that I introduce them to is intermittent fasting or time restricted eating, but with a very, very flexible approach. One of my least favorite questions. I get a couple questions that I try to get out of their heads. They come in, they think they know stuff about intermittent fasting. They do. They say, well, will this break my fast? Or if I have this outside of my eating window, is this problematic? So I turned them around right away. I said, listen, man, we are just using it as a tool to control calories. The most important thing is going to be the total amount you eat throughout the day, the quality of your food, how much protein you're getting, how much fiber you're getting. Have some flexibility, but if fasting is the thing that makes it so that, all right, I'm putting a line in the sand, no eating after 8 p.m., and that's getting them to stop eating that snack that they knew that no wasn't serving them, then I think it's a great tool for busy guys to help control their calories without having to actually sit down on an app and track everything, which doesn't work for everybody. Works for some, works great for some, but a lot of the guys, they're just not willing or able to do it. So I like to call it flexible intermittent fasting. Don't stress about having some cream in your coffee. Don't stress about having a protein shake after your workout if you're working out outside your eating window. And then every 2 weeks, we add a new habit. After that, we focus on the types of carbs you're getting, maybe limiting your carbs to just one meal a day to help control calories. Then we focus on looking at how much protein on your plate, look at the size of your palms to gauge how much protein you're getting. Then we look at vegetable content, get a certain amount of vegetables on your plate to help fill you up, get that fiber. And then once we have a good, well-structured plate after a couple months, then I finally introduce them to calories and macros. And at that point, they're really kind of ready for it because their plate's structured the right way. And it's just a matter of kind of dialing in the right amounts. People are so quick to want to get into calories and macros, but I find if you start off really, really slow, almost too slow, if it seems too easy, that's probably at a good pace, then it works out a lot better than just throwing the whole kitchen sink at them at once, especially with the busy guys that I'm working with where have a ton of other priorities. And it's worked really, really well within my program. What about yourself? What are you currently doing?
That's it. Well, really quick, I wanted to touch on that because I think that's a great way of doing things. Like I have a hard time sometimes because I get so stuck in like the scientist type of brain, right? Where it's like, sometimes people just need something that's practical and works. We know there's no magic to intermittent fasting in the sense that it doesn't have any inherent benefits besides caloric restriction for weight loss, but it's a useful tool, right? And if people start using it and they start seeing some success, that's great. So that's why I asked the question of like, do you have a particular framework? For me, my general framework is I am a fan of having clients track at the beginning if they so desire, but also mainly working on habit-based changes on the side. So I like to work with clients starting with no more than two or three small habits, identifying which habits would benefit them the most based off just like an intake form, right? Like identifying based off questions around protein or fiber, or fruit and vegetable, meal regularity, et cetera. And then very similarly, every 2 weeks we assess progress. If everything's going really good, I often don't change anything. If we're struggling or we're not seeing the progress we want, we add another small habit or we increase the intensity of a particular habit. And that's usually, I mean, it's pretty simple, but that's usually enough to start seeing the progress that they want, right? Because part of coaching is appropriate recommendations, but as both you and I know, it's more like the correct type of guidance, right? And making sure clients stay on track, because it's usually not that what you're giving them isn't working. It's that they're not executing on it for some particular reason. It's like, whether it's a mental hurdle or they don't necessarily know how to incorporate it into their lifestyle. I think that's where it comes down to most, but the commonalities amongst all clients in terms of the recommendations that I like to give upfront when it comes to habits is super simple. I don't necessarily consider protein a habit, even though it is, because I give everybody a protein target to work towards. But aside from that, a general step goal. I like starting or meeting clients where they're at and then slowly increasing their steps to a point that's realistic for them and helps them make progress towards their goals. I find that having a good step goal is also a pretty good way to get people to not eat when they're bored as well. Because hey, I still have another 2,000 steps to do. I'm not doing anything right now. Let me go for a 20-minute walk. That's 20 minutes that you might have been sitting on the couch snacking on something, right? So I'm a big fan of a step goal. I'm a big fan of a fruit and vegetable goal. I don't care what fruits and veggies you're eating. Let's aim for about 5 servings per day. If you're not there yet, we start slower, build that up. A fiber target, but that gets covered pretty well with the fruit and vegetable goal. And for a lot of clients who have very poor sleep, which is pretty common, just working on a sleep hygiene routine. I have guides to help clients develop these sorts of habits. But really, those are the main things alongside with a nice structured training program. I actually want to talk to you a little bit about training as well, because I know that
you do
some training for your clients as well. What are some of the things there that you see? I guess not to repeat the same question, but what's your overall philosophy with training, similar to your nutrition philosophy?
Master the basics before you worry about getting fancy. So many guys will come in and they've never tracked before. And we find that to be the biggest difference, that they'll use a program that they got from college football coach or high school football coach, which on paper is awesome, but they kind of guess what weight they're using. So they've never used an app where they're looking to see what they did before and trying to do it. Tried to do one more rep the following week. So basic progressive overload. I will be the first to say that you look at my workouts and there's really nothing fancy about them. It's not like, oh, you're going to do this one leg standing on a Bosu ball with the kettlebell hand the other hand. Dude, lat pull downs, rows, squat variations, single leg variations, learn how to hinge. If you can do some pull-ups, awesome. Press some dumbbells, great. But focus on getting better at those workout to workout. And you'll notice the little app will get those PRs. And when you actually get those PRs on a semi-regular basis, that's when you notice the biggest change. So yeah, basic progressive overload with basic compound lifts that work for you, that aren't overloading your spine. You know, I don't do a lot of barbell squats in my program. Don't really do deadlifts from the floor just because of the clientele that I'm working for. But yeah, a few basic lifts where you're consistently getting better from week to week. Pepper in a good step count. I'm big on that. A lot of guys will come in there like, oh, I'm doing 5-6 days a week a hit. I'm like, yeah, maybe not the best for what you say you're trying to achieve. So trying to find a schedule that works for them. Also having them understand they can get great results training 3 days a week. On my application, everyone says, yeah, I'm willing to do 5 to 6 days a week. I said, listen, man, that's great. I love it. I love your gumption, but you're not going to need that. If you can consistently do 3 to 4 days a week over a long period of time, that's going to do better than 6 days a week for 6 weeks or 8 weeks until you burn down and realize that it's not sustainable. You don't have to do marathon cardio. Focusing on a step count is phenomenal. You don't have to do dedicated mobility sessions 12 times a week. Do a little bit of stretching, work out your hips while you're watching TV at night. Implement that. Pepper it into your week in a way that is sustainable. Master the basic long term and you will get results that go beyond anything you've ever done. It doesn't have to be crazy fancy.
Do you find it that some people have a hard time mentally accepting, like, because I'm similar to you, like, I'm such a big fan of lifting, and having some people transition from like mainly doing HIIT workouts or even just like cardio for hours a week to mainly predominantly doing lifting, it can be tough mentally for some people.
It is, because when you do a really, really tough HIIT workout, there's that immediate mental feedback. I did something great. That was really tough. I really, really exerted myself. I'm in a pool of my own sweat. I soaked through my t-shirt. Yeah. This must be working. And yeah, it does work on some levels. Whereas if you go do a weight training session where you did 4 or 5 exercises, 2 sets, and you leave and you're like, I could have done like 40% more, 20% more. That doesn't feel like it's doing anything. Whereas, yeah, the HIIT workout, it felt good at the time, but it's really, really tough to track progress. Obviously, you can get improve your heart rate and your aerobic capacity on all that stuff, but it's really not going to change the shape of your body in a way that tracking with weightlifting and doing it to a point where you can actually recover from is going to do. So you got to get over kind of that mental, what am I looking for? So a HIIT workout, you'll feel like you're doing a lot more, whereas a weight training session, you feel like you could have done more, but the weight training session in most cases is going to change your body and do the things that you say that you really want to make happen, even though it doesn't feel like you exerted yourself as hard at the time.
Yeah, I will say that most people that feel like they didn't exert themselves hard enough with lifting is because pushing your limits with lifting is a really hard skill to learn. It's very easy to just like run until the point that you're just like sweating a ton and breathing hard. Like most people know how to do that. Most people don't know how to go near failure on a lifting based movement, right? I was going to say a squat, but like even talking about not a squat, let's say you're doing some leg movements on a Smith machine. Like it's really freaking hard to actually push near failure. And not just is it hard to push near failure, people don't really know what that point is. I've usually experienced that it takes a couple of months for clients to really learn that, because they'll do a set of 15 reps on a Smith machine squat, which on its own, even if you have no weight on there, like doing 15 reps is going to burn a little bit. It's going to put you out of breath a little bit, right? So clients are like, oh, but it burned. It burned. I did 15 reps and it burned. And like, I was out of breath. It felt tough. It's like, yes, but that is not the feeling of your quads literally shaking, your brain telling you stop, and you go for another rep and you still go nice and slow. You still get that deep range of motion. That is such a difficult skill to learn. And I think when people learn how to do that, you realize that lifting weights, it's actually a lot more difficult than doing a HIIT workout.
100%. And I have a couple mental tricks, and you know, first things first, I love them to fall in love with the art of the PR and just doing a little bit. Yeah. And when you track it and you see, all right, well, I did 8 reps last time with this weight, I'm going to get that 9th rep, and you get to rep 5, 6, and you're like, this is kind of all I got, but I got 8 last time. Let's go for it. You're about to do that 9th, and you're like, let's do it. And you get it, and you push yourself past a place that you've never been before. So when you're actually tracking Whereas normally you would just stop a set when it starts to get difficult. Oh, that was good. I exerted myself. What's next? You do that, you're going to be able to overcome that. And then I just play little mental tricks. I actually have a video coming out very soon. It's called the $1 billion question, or you could call it, there are a lot of things you can call it, but you ask yourself the $1 billion question. If I had the opportunity to get $1 billion for doing one more rep, would I do it? $100, $10,000, whatever money amount moves the needle for you. But I guarantee you, a lot of the guys that I see on their sets in the gym, I'm not meticulously watching every single person train, but I see people, I'm like, you had more reps than you. Why'd you stop? You stopped, you went immediately to your phone, and then you barely exerted yourself. I guarantee you that for $1 billion, you could have banged out another rep, two reps, three reps, four reps, whatever mental tricks you got to play like that. With my life dependent on it, can I do another rep? Oftentimes you have that extra rep, and obviously you want to do it on exercises where you can fail safely, like a push-up and not a barbell squat, 300 pounds on your back. That's a different story. But you get in the habit of doing that, you're going to expectations, and then just get used to failing. That's one thing I learned early on with push-ups, and I think it helped me. I was like, oh, if I can do one more, hit that target, going to find that extra rep, and that's what actually changes your body. And yeah, it's a great skill to develop. Whatever trick or app you got to do to get there, whatever it takes, you got to learn how to fail safely.
Yeah, it's one, a couple tips I like to share with clients to help them know whether or not they're pushing hard enough is, if you have a workout that's 4 or 5 exercises total, 2 or 3 sets per exercise, and you feel like it's not enough, you're not pushing, because that's a lot of work. 4 or 5 exercises, 2 or 3 sets. For example, I trained my legs today. I did 3 sets of a hack squat machine. I did 3 sets of lying hamstring curl. I did 2 sets of squats on the Smith machine. And I did 3 sets of good mornings on the Smith machine. That workout took me 1.5 hours, and my legs were shaking when I left. And people might think, like, 4 exercises and that took you 1.5 hours. Like, you're probably just eating shit at the gym. It's like, no, like, it really takes me 4 or 5 minutes to recover between sets, because I always go for that extra rep. And that last rep, I'm always shaking, and it's always super hard, right? I won't say always, but the majority of the time, that's what it's like. And so a couple indicators for people listening, like, if you get through a workout that's 12 or 15 sets total, if you get through that in 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you're not pushing yourself hard enough. If you leave the gym and you feel like you barely worked out, you're not pushing hard enough. Yeah. If you do a set and you feel like you're ready for the next set 60 seconds later, you didn't push hard enough, right? Like it's these basic little things that if you start to pay attention to, you really realize that, like, hey, I probably have a lot left in the tank. And that's also one of the reasons why people don't see the changes in body composition that they want to see.
Do you think that people can learn that? Do you think that certain people can go from not pushing themselves hard enough to just really, really developing that and finding, you know, normally I would have stopped here, but I had 6 reps left in me. I do the mental games. I do the app. What do you teach your clients to be able to actually push past that? It's tough to verbalize. It's a tough skill to develop. What have you been able to do?
So I do 2 things. One, I always encourage clients to go for an extra rep, especially for beginner clients. Like, right, it depends on where the client is. I work with some clients who are a little bit more advanced athletes, and those clients understand that you're not going to hit a PR every week. Like, it gets to the point where you can't PR every week. But for people who are beginners, I always talk to them about the importance of intensity. I share with them some videos on, like, what intense training looks like versus, like, leaving 5 in the tank, right? I tell them, like, listen, because oftentimes when we start talking about intensity, they're like, man, like, it's really hard to do. And I'm like, yes, it is really hard to do. But if you just go for an extra rep every week or an extra 5 pounds, you will find that limit quick, right?
Yep.
But besides that, I share with them videos that are helpful. I also ask my clients to send me videos. One of the main things I look for is I tell them to look at their first rep and their last rep in a video. And I tell them, like, listen, if the speed of that last rep looks very similar to the speed of your first rep, that's a good indicator that you have several reps left in the tank.
Yeah.
I don't care if it burns. I don't care if you're breathing hard. Just being as objective as possible. If you push your limits, the last rep will be substantially slower than your first rep. So that's the main thing I try to show them. And so then, for example, if a client's struggling with one exercise in particular, I'll just ask them to send me a video of that exercise for every check-in. And I just give them a little bit more feedback and a little bit more feedback. I do notice that like learning how to train with appropriate intensity takes longer than learning how to do an exercise correctly, takes longer than learning how to maximize range of motion or like control negatives. It's a hard skill, but just like ongoing feedback on how they're doing. And then over time, it tends to improve.
Yeah. I mean, well, for all intents and purposes, squat form is it's pretty subjective. You're either doing it right. I mean, objective. No. It's you're either doing it right or you're doing it wrong. Whereas intensity is a concept, or the mind muscle connection as a concept. It's tougher to teach, but if you can develop the skill of getting people to master that, then that's what kind of what it takes to be a good coach. So love to see that what you're doing is working. And, you know, I'm always trying to improve my skill set there. So that's dope, man.
Yeah. This is one of the reasons why I like having people who coach as well on the show, because I learn from you. It's a good conversation. Man. And with the intensity thing, like when clients really start to get it, you always get the same type of like feedback. They're like, wow, like, yeah, this is really hard. It's like, yeah, like lifting is really hard.
But nothing feels better than hitting a PR, even if it's just 5 pounds. And like I say, it's when you see those numbers on the paper go up, it's only a matter of time before you see the changes in the mirror that blow your mind and exceed what you thought you were capable of. So the mirror follows what happens in the app. Sometimes it takes a little while, but training with intensity, you got to do it, or you may as well not train at all. I don't know. I see people at the gym that have been going there for years, and they really don't look any better than they did before. And they're on their phones, they're talking, they're chatting. Like, man, if you just dug a little deeper every single set, you would look totally different than you do. I mean, I suppose it's better than not training at all, but leaving a lot of results. And if you're there, you may as well go hard.
Yeah. I will say, listen, like, because I think all the clients that you work with and most of the clients that I work with too, like, they want to improve their body composition, right? Like, I do want to preface by saying, like, hey, exercise is great. Like, if you just want to feel good and you want to move some weights around and do some cardio, like, that's great. It's still going to positively impact your health. But the 100%. Difference between, like, what's good for your health versus what's effective to build muscle, there's such a stark difference with how much harder you actually have to train to see substantial progress. And at first you'll see progress with whatever you do, but at a certain point you really do have to push the limits on a regular basis. But it's fun. It's fun. You get to really love it. Steve, my man, it's been a pleasure. I think you were about to say something. Sorry to cut you off.
No, I guess I would just finish off by saying, like, if I love lifting weights, I love taking care of my body, and if I can get my clients to love it half as much as I do, then I consider myself my job done. And I love helping guys catch the bug and just changing their long-term habits. I'm sure you're the exact same way. But yeah, looks like we're wrapping up, man. Thank you so much for having me on here. This is amazing. There's so many other things I wanted to talk about, but this is great. I think we covered a lot.
We can always do a follow-up, man. I was going to say, I love lifting. Like, going to the gym is what I look forward to every day. And sometimes I have to remind myself, like, hey, not everyone is like that, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
Right. Cause from a coaching perspective, sometimes I'm like, maybe I'm trying to get this client to do what I like, and this isn't necessarily what they want to do either.
Yeah.
And I've experienced it with certain clients when they're like, hey, like, remember, I'm not trying to be super jacked. I just want to feel better. I just want to move a little bit better. So it's hard sometimes to put our feelings aside and meet clients where they really are and what they want. Because for me, I'm like, man, this shit is the best. Like, you need to do this. It's the best, right? That can be tough too. But yeah, man, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. I'm happy that we had some time to have an actual conversation. Like I said, we've been following each other on Instagram for a while, and it's nice to actually meet here. Do you mind sharing with everybody listening where they can find you if they wanted to work with you, what your website is?
Yeah, absolutely. Find me on Instagram. I'm dadbod_Steve. TikTok, dadbodsteve, all one word. If you want to get my free PDF guide, my Fast Start Guide 2.0 came out pretty recently, go to goodbyedadbod.com Dr. Joey Munoz.com. You'll be able to download it instantaneously and help create a strong dad bod free foundation.
Dude, your marketing is on point. Goodbyedadbod.com. That's so good.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
I might need to get some lessons from you, man. Anyways, all jokes aside, for those of you guys listening, if you're interested in connecting with Steve, his links will be down in the description. As always, just scroll down and you'll find them there. If you listen to the whole episode, I appreciate you taking time to listening to us chatting. And as always, if you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to leave a rating and review the podcast. I'll catch you guys in next week's episode.